Did you know that you can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by donating stocks, bonds, and mutual funds to Lutheran Public Radio? For more information, contact Craig at 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. Please consider donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds to Issues Etc. this year. Call Craig today, 618-223-8385. Thanks for your support.
Because I am a Catholic, and no Catholic has ever been elected president, the real issues in this campaign have been obscured, perhaps deliberately, in some quarters less responsible than this. So it is apparently necessary for me to state once again, not what kind of church I believe in, for that should be important only to me, but what kind of America I believe in. I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no Catholic prelate would tell the president, should he be Catholic, how to act, and no Protestant minister would tell his parishioners for whom to vote.
Well, now famous words from 1960 from then Democratic candidate for the presidency, John F. Kennedy, speaking on religion and politics, on religious freedom, and also on the separation of church and state. Now, recently, another man, another Roman Catholic, who had hoped to be the Republican candidate, nominee, for president of the United States in the upcoming elections, Rick Santorum, has said that upon reviewing Kennedy's speech recently, his comments about an absolute separation of church and state made him sick, I think I paraphrase a little bit, and he's been defending those comments as a Roman Catholic and as a potential candidate for the presidency. We're going to be talking about what it is that President Kennedy meant when he said those things, the context in which he spoke those things, and he did make a rather able defense of religious liberty, even back in 1960, when I imagine in the minds of some, an assault on religious liberty was almost unthinkable. It isn't unthinkable anymore, that's for sure. Dr. James Hitchcock will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc., coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon, the 28th of February. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with James Hitchcock, Brian Godawa, a Hollywood screenwriter, will join us. We'll talk about the winners of this year's Academy Awards. Adam Christing will join us after that. We're going to talk about Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, and his run for president of the United States. I always have to remind myself that among all of the exploits of Joseph Smith with regard to Mormonism, he did think that he ought to be president of the United States in his day. Then Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us in the last half hour of the program to talk about two stories, the inadvertent burning of Qurans at a military base in Afghanistan and its reaction, and then the new Syrian constitution, the hotbed of the Arab Spring turned Arab summer, winter, fall, and a new spring is back around again, is Syria itself. We'll see what Dr. Schmidt thinks about Islam and democracy in that part of the world. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. James Hitchcock is a regular guest, and he's professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back.
Thank you. Always glad to be here.
What was your reaction? Do you agree or disagree with Senator Santorum's reaction to that 1960 speech, in particular about the absolute separation of church and state?
Well, the thing that it made him sick, as he said, is pretty strong. That suggests to me that was he not previously familiar with the speech, because those of us who have been familiar with it for a long time, we don't have that strong emotional reaction anymore, although I agree with Mr. Santorum that the speech was quite unfortunate, I think. In fact, I think that today, the one thing to bear in mind, very important, is that was a speech made to a group of Protestant ministers, many of them, I think, Southern Baptists. I think today a lot of Southern Baptists and a lot of Protestant ministers would not agree with the speech. They saw it at that time as reassuring because it was, well, the Pope's not going to interfere in our affairs. But then when they looked at it in another light, it was religion itself is now to be excluded from public life. And they saw then that that wasn't the way they wanted to go.
Maybe that's the way they construed it when they heard it in 1960. I think you're absolutely right there. I guess the real question in my mind was the president or the candidate for president, John F. Kennedy at the time, was he construing it that narrowly, that don't worry, the Pope isn't going to tell me what to do if I occupy the White House? It's hard to hear his words the entire 12 minutes of that speech and construe it that narrowly.
Yeah, I think the truth of the matter is that Kennedy was a very secular-minded person. I think that as people have studied him more carefully, I think he wore his religion pretty lightly and probably didn't understand people for whom religion was extremely important. And so he probably didn't think that he was saying anything that in a way was all that controversial. And I think, though, that he set a direction. It would have happened anyway, but I mean, he set a direction which has been followed by a lot of secular politicians ever since, mostly on the liberal side of the spectrum. We don't want religion interfering in public life. And I don't think he would have been unhappy with the way it turned out. In fact, certainly his brother Edward, who was in the Senate for many years, followed in those footsteps, as well as several other Kennedys who have been in public life.
As an historian, I would like you to summarize President Kennedy's 1960 speech on religion and politics. Begin, if you would, with the context you've touched upon it, the context in which he thought he needed to make these statements as a national candidate.
Well, he was, of course, I guess the second American to seriously run for the presidency, the first having been Alfred Smith. It was generally recognized that Smith had lost in part because of strong anti-Catholic feelings. Some of the same issues were being raised in 1960. The well-known preacher Norman Vincent Peale, for example, said he wasn't sure whether it was appropriate for a Catholic to be in the White House. This was just before the Second Vatican Council, when the council issued a pretty ringing decree in favor of religious liberty. So there were people who said the Catholic Church doesn't believe in religious liberty. And so Kennedy decides that he's going to somehow have to defuse that, and apparently decides that Houston is the place to do it. It was a center of intense Southern Baptist life. There was a group of ministers there that he could speak to. The speech was supposedly written for him to a great extent by one of his aides. But as I say, I don't have any doubt that it seems to have worked. I mean, he got elected by a very, very narrow margin, but I do think that to some extent the speech defused the religious issue.
What exactly did he say in those few minutes in Houston before these religious, largely Protestant religious leaders?
Well, he said, I can't quote him word for word. It's been a while since I looked at it, but he basically said, I have my faith, which is a private thing. It is nobody's business what my religion is, and I have no business imposing my religion on others. No bishop, Catholic bishop, should ever tell people what to think or how to vote, and neither should any Protestant minister do that. This is the idea of absolute separation of church and state, which is the American way. I think that's the gist of it as I kind of remember it. And as I say, I think a number of Protestants later on began to think maybe that wasn't the way to go either, but it was acceptable at the time.
He says here in part, and I want your reaction to it, I believe in an America that is neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either, and here's the words I'd like you to focus on, either requests or accepts instruction on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source.
Yeah.
It seems to say that in saying request or accepts, he's being rather strong there.
He is. Now, I think it depends on what you mean by the word instruction here. If he means by that, I got a phone call from the Pope and he tells me, I should do this or that, then I'd say, yeah, that's something that we don't think would be appropriate for an American politician. But I think instruction, meaning listen to moral voices, listen to people who have a concern about morality and public, the good of the public good, and I should listen to them carefully, and think that they may have something worthwhile to tell me. And so when he rejects instruction in that sense, I think he's taking a pretty extreme position.
He also seems to reflect a rather dark historical view of religious strife. And he says that he dreams of an America, and he speaks about religious intolerance ending, and he says in part, there is no Catholic vote, there is no anti-Catholic vote, no voting bloc of any kind, where Catholics, Protestant, Jews, at both the lay and the pastoral level, will refrain from those attitudes of disdain and division that have so often marred their works in the past. What's he saying?
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously referring to the bitter, the know-nothing movement of the 19th century, the rehabilitated Ku Klux Klan in the 20th century, probably alluding here to the election of 1928. But it's kind of like one extreme to the other. You know, the implication seems to be, well, we were kind of at each other's throat in the past, and so from now on, let's just leave religion at arm's length. Now, you know, people get passionate and divisive in politics for any number of reasons. It can be race, it can be economic status, it can be wars, it can be gender, it can be any number of things. It is not true that in American history religion has been the great divider. We didn't fight the Civil War over religion. So it's a kind of a strange hysterical reaction to that, as though there's something uniquely dangerous about religion, which is just simply not true.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Dr. James Hitchcock, professor of history at St. Louis University, about President John F. Kennedy's speech back in 1960. It's getting replayed now with its reference from one of the Republican candidates for president, Senator Rick Santorum, and his reaction to it. We'll see what President Kennedy had to say back on that day in defense of religious liberty and see what Dr. Hitchcock thinks about it. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Stay tuned.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. Issuesetc.org. Go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
I believe in an America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source. When no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace or the public acts of its officials, and where religious liberty is so indivisible that an act against one church is treated as an act against all.
An excerpt from a 1960 speech by presidential candidate John F. Kennedy before the Greater Houston Ministerial Association. We're talking about the speech and its reaction brought to light by Rick Santorum, who's running for president this year. Dr. James Hitchcock of St. Louis University is our guest. I want to talk about Kennedy's nod there toward religious liberty, and the remarks sound positively prescient. Especially given the news lately regarding the HHS mandate and birth control and the Roman Catholic Church. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, well, I think one thing that Kennedy hadn't thought through, and that is that at what point does this position of absolute separation of church and state begin to infringe upon religious freedom? So what we're hearing in the case of the HHS mandates right now is that, well, here again we see a religion which is imposing its own values on society, and therefore it's the duty of the government to make them behave. And I don't think Kennedy had even begun to think about that back in the early 60s, and maybe nobody could have foreseen at that time what was going to happen. All religions have a social dimension. I never heard of a religion that didn't try to tell people how they should live their life in society. And to exclude that and to say religion is simply what you do on Sunday morning in church is automatically to infringe religious liberty.
One of the things that I found, you can't blame then candidate Kennedy for leaving it out because I'm sure it was on no one's radar at the time, but one of the things that I found conspicuous by its absence, he talked about Catholics, Protestants, Jews. Today, that list would have one more term on it of absolute necessity,
and yes,
that would be Muslim.
Yeah, exactly. He obviously could not have foreseen that. A little thing in the other direction, and that is his mentioning of the National Council of Churches, the Pope and the National Council of Churches. I believe that organization is pretty much without any influence today. The Protestant presence in public life mostly now comes from groups that don't belong to the National Council of Churches. But that was, again, something he couldn't have foreseen. Yeah, the whole Muslim thing creates all kinds of issues the Kennedy position is quite simplistic when you come right down to it, and it's not of much help, I think, in trying to work out the issues that are now being raised by Muslims and others. There's also here, I think, where it should be pointed out, I think that there's that to a certain extent that this thing is a little bit fraudulent in the sense that if a man like Santorum speaks out and everybody knows what he's talking about abortion, he's talking about homosexual marriage, etc., then people cry foul. This is religion interfering in politics. But if somebody comes along and the president does this, you know, talks about the gospel imperative of helping the needy. If someone comes along and raises moral questions about the war in Afghanistan, if somebody says, my religion tells me that homosexuals should be allowed to get married, this is all considered kind of a positive contribution to public discussion. It's not deemed to be interference in political life. So there's a definite double standard here.
You have said, and I think it was on our airwaves several years ago, that if one held consistently to this notion of an absolute separation of church and state, that no one could stand for public office in the United States except atheists and agnostics. What did you mean by that? Do you still stand by it?
Yes, I do. I think that's quite true, although we could add, of course, another element, and maybe Kennedy was an example of that, and that is someone who says, oh, I do believe in God and I do believe in a church, but of course I don't, what that church teaches has no influence on me whatsoever. That I'm not sure we want those kind of people to be in public life either. And of course, where do you draw the line? If if you find a politician who's got his hand in the cookie jar and he's been taking bribes and so forth, and somebody brings that up, and then he says, "Well, I know my church tells me that's wrong, but you see, I don't allow religion to interfere with politics." I mean, religion and ethics, religion and morals, continually intertwine. And if you're going to exclude religion, you're going to have to exclude morals also.
Was Kennedy in his day, in some ways, a prototype for the what we have now today, sadly in abundance, and that is kind of the cafeteria Catholic politician who, either wittingly or unwittingly, parrots Kennedy's sentiments on a regular basis to excuse what they do legislatively?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's a model that they all kind of look back to. As again, his brother Edward was the living embodiment of that for decades afterwards. There are several things about it. Not only is he the model so far as religion is concerned, but I mean, Kennedy set a certain example of what you might call the glamorous politician. And I think that particularly in the Democratic Party, there's been a continuous search ever since that for the glamorous politician and you know, the man who supposedly was very sophisticated and had artists in the White House and advised by intellectuals and all of that. That too tends to blend into secularism after a while.
Realistically, does every politician who has a public religious position, that is an affiliation or membership in some kind of a religious organization, whatever it may be, do they have to, in the post-Kennedy era, follow in his footsteps to some degree, no matter how small, in distancing themselves from their religious positions, the religious institution they're associated with, in order to get broad and electable appeal?
No, by and large, I would say not, because we are still a strongly religious country. Most people do belong to a church. Most people do believe in religion. The distinction is this, and sometimes it's a little bit difficult to maintain, goes back again to that word instruction. Obviously, no politician can say or should say, well, you know, my church says abortion is wrong, so therefore, against my better judgment, I'm going to be opposed to abortion. But what the politician can say and should say is, my whole personality, my whole character, my whole identity, what I believe, my values, have been formed over a matter of many decades by my religion. And this is reflected now, therefore, in how I approach public policy. I'm not waiting for a bishop to call me up and tell me what to do, but the way I look at things is certainly through the eyes of a believer. That I think, is the distinction that should be made. And I think we should be suspicious of someone who claims to be a believer and says somehow or other that doesn't influence the way I look at the world. I'm not sure we want a person like that in office.
In 1960, the anti-Catholicism was, at least Kennedy's perception, was coming from American Protestant religious leaders. Where is it coming from today?
It's coming, of course, predominantly, overwhelmingly today from secularists. There was a lot of that, too, back then. There was a man named Paul Blanchard, whom I would characterize as a professional anti-Catholic, and who was basically a militant secular humanist. Kennedy was known to have read his books. But those people weren't terribly visible at that time. They have become increasingly so. They've become increasingly aggressive. The number of percentage of people who call themselves atheists and so forth is increasing. They're still a small minority, but they have enormous influence in all areas of communication, in the educational system, the universities, in journalism, in Hollywood. The influence of the secular often anti-religious skeptic is very much disproportionate.
Why do you think that even today it is the Catholic Church that is singled out for this kind of negative attention in America? About a minute.
First of all, it's the biggest, of course. It's been the most aggressive on issues like abortion. I think maybe that some of the secularists who are hoping that they can also gather in the remnants of Protestant anti-Catholicism. I mean, the Protestant anti-Catholicism has diminished enormously in the last 50 years, but there may be people who think that they can still clean up a little bit with the remnants of it. But I think it's mostly the fact that it's the largest church and the most, and it's been, by and large, the most aggressive on these issues.
Dr. James Hitchcock is professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, we thank you very much for your time.
I look forward to the next time. All right, bye.
When we come back over the weekend, all of the stars were out. It was beautiful. It was glittering. It was everything that a big gala production ought to be as they reward themselves and award themselves for their work on the silver screen. The Oscars, of course, are always something that people talk about for weeks before and at least a week afterwards. And laying aside all of the glitterati and laying aside all of the showmanship there, what about the actual films? What about this art form that, well, our guest coming up in the next segment says that this is the predominant art form in American culture today, and rightly so, film. Who were the winners? Who were the losers? And did all the Oscars go to the right place when they all met out there in Hollywood? Brian Godawa, a screenwriter in Hollywood, will join us after this to round off this first hour of Issues Etc. We'll talk about the winners of this year's Academy Awards. Adam Christing joins us in the second hour to talk about Joseph Smith, founder of Mormonism and one-time hopeful presidential candidate. And we'll also talk with Dr. Alvin Schmidt about the burnings of Qurans and the new Syrian constitution. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Diane Olger was 2 weeks from delivering her baby girl, but Mark, her husband, couldn't wait. He had only days to live. After surgery for colon cancer and 6 months of chemotherapy, Mark and Diane thought he had beaten the disease. Complications from the chemo scarred and thickened his lungs. It was a fatal condition. Mark's dying wish was to see his daughter. The doctors suggested Diane be induced, and she readily agreed. As she delivered Savannah, Mark was lying in a bed next to hers. When his daughter was placed in his arms, he cried. He held Savannah for nearly an hour. They were precious minutes because Mark soon grew very weak and died 5 days later. But Diane will make sure Savannah knows how much her daddy loved her.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.